happened before that.
Fundamental part of the podcast is
we've got halfway through an episode and we've gone, oh, shit, we're not recording.
Just run it back, it's fine.
And confirm that I can see us recording, just for...
Excellent, excellent. We don't want another lost episode, do we? Right, okay. Right, so then, gentlemen, we are live in 5, 4, 3... Hello and welcome to the Leeds Light Blues podcast. You're joining me, your host, Brother Matt Nemiria, and with me tonight...
Brother Josh Jockety Turnbull.
Brother Matthew Wharton.
Brother Paul Rogers.
Worshipful Brother Saul Nyman.
Worshipful Brother Alan Webster.
Worshipful Brother Alex Webster.
Worshipful Brother Websters, welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Evening.
Welcome.
Before we go any further, brethren, raise a glass. Worshipful Brother Webster Senior, are we all charged in the south?
We are.
And Worshipful Brother Webster Junior, are we all charged in the west?
All charged in the west.
The brethren, the queen and the craft.
Queen and the craft.
Queen and the craft.
And I am on tonight, starting off with a bit of monkey shoulder. And I'm going to be going on to this, the Ardbeg. Bit of a peaty whiskey, that one. What's everyone else drinking tonight?
I am on Calamansification by the Wild Bear Company.
I'm back on Yorkshire Clear this week.
Newcastle Brown.
Oh.
The dirty stuff.
How are you, man?
A selection of dodgy various ales.
Love it.
Okay.
A nice cheeky little rosé, which is called Zinfandel.
Very nice.
And I think I'm just working my way through what was left in the fridge. So currently on a nondescript Sauvignon Blanc, and we'll be moving on to a white Zinfandel myself.
Excellent. Excellent. Well then, brethren, it's a pleasure to have you on. And we're going to be getting into quite a few good topics tonight. So we've got a really good episode ahead of us. Let's just go through the likes that we've had on our Facebook, which we, since last time we came on here, we've had a few new likes. We have Noel Pangilinan, Tomanovich Petar, Gerard J. O'Donnell, Terry Lambert, Robert Davey, Robert Lysett Nutt, Ashley Moran, and Patsy Quinn. So, brethren, raise a glass to our guests.
Our guests.
Yeah. Need new beer. To our guests.
To our guests.
Worship of Brother Webster's. We'll start with Senior. As is tradition on the podcast, every new person that we get on the podcast, we like to ask one question, kind of to put on the spot a little bit, but not to make you too uncomfortable, which is your top three lodges that you've ever visited. It can't be your own.
Right.
So anyone that you've visited that you particularly regard as an experience that you've really enjoyed, perhaps you even your favourite one that you like to visit.
Yeah.
Any really. So, Alan, what would be your top three?
Well, I think basically, as I'm a liaison officer and I have under my care ADL 6250 and the Allerton 3047, that I don't really visit them, but they are very, 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 very nice lodges, lovely people, and anybody who wants to visit would always be very well received there. I then really get to a bit of an embarrassment of riches because I've actually got four favourite lodges.
Okay.
The two I'm going to lump together are Lodge of Dawn 6511 and Loyalty Lodge 4971. And the reason I enjoy visiting them is because I've got so many friends there from over the years, with people who I've met through social, religious, economic, any sort of part of life, I've met people from there. And I always have a good evening. And I even forgive them for always continually asking me to respond to the visitors. My other favourite lodge is one of our daughter lodges, and it's Zetland Lodge, number 1311. It goes without saying that a visit to Zetland is always a unique experience. They do things very differently to everybody else, and in a good way. The festive board is always an hilarious occasion. The standard of public speaking, I mean, if you get, it's on a Judge Worthley QC speaking, David A, people like that, you have a very entertaining night. My last one is one where I would ask you all if you can grab yourselves an invite to try and go and visit. And that's Apollo University Lodge, number 357 in the city of Oxford. And that's the Oxford University Lodge. And it goes without saying that some of the most interesting people you could ever wish to meet in your life attend there. I remember one of the first times I went, I walked in, it was a Saturday, they meet on a Saturday, and Ireland were playing Wales Rugby Union. I walked in and there were two gentlemen a little bit older than myself watching. And I walked in and I said, what's the score? And the elder of the two said, well, the Irish are playing very bad, blah, blah, blah. And I walked out and somebody said, oh, you're quite pally then, do you know them? I said, who? He said, well, the bloke you spoke to was the Lord Cadogan, and the fellow sat next to him was Peter Spence. And of course, they're both members of this extremely ancient lodge. So I'd always recommend that you go there. I mean, things that happened to you there. I was sat at the festive board with a fellow who wasn't particularly tall or muscular. And I said to him, what do you do for pleasure apart from Freemasonry? Oh, he said, I do a bit of fencing. Oh, I said, right. I said, what sort of standard are you? Oh, well, I said, I represent Great Britain at the Olympics. If you ever get a chance, and the way to get there is to keep your eye out with the Lodge of Dawn, because much of the Simon Fellow's son, Robbie, is a past master of the Oxford University Lodge. And he always enjoys some company on the way down. Okay. They dine at the Ratcliffe, which is a bit expensive. So if you do get an invite, I think it's always polite to offer to pay your own way with it. But that's my favourite visit.
Excellent. Well, I think we even got a shout out for Josh's lodge there as well. And within that, brethren, let's raise a glass then to Usher Brother Webster Senior's lodges.
Oh, to Alan's lodges.
Alan's lodges.
And then that brings us to Usher Brother Webster Junior. So, Alex, same question to you. Top three lodges. Perhaps you'd like to tell us why as well.
I guess it's a good job I've gone second there. Because if I'd gone with my first three, there'd have definitely been a steward's inquiry about any collusion, because I very much had Zetland on there, and as Dad said, JDT being a member, Zetland's a cracking lodge because of the welcome you get. Because unless you've got a double barreled name or you landed gentry, you can't join. I get a smile from Josh, but it's just a great place, and you know, they make you feel so welcome no matter what stage of your Masonic life you're at. But I also had loyalty in Dawn down because they're, you know, for the same reasons, you know so many people there. So I try to make it a little bit different. I've got to have at least one of those in. So we'll lump all three of them together. A lodge I really enjoyed visiting was a few years back. Dad was there, and it was with a much loved and departed brother, worshipful brother, Leonard Strickland Beattie, and we went over to the far corner of West Lancashire to West Derby Castle Lodge 5821. And that was just a really great experience for me. I was a Master Mason by then. So it was sort of a rare trip probably at that point where I'd gone through all three degrees. And it's in, you know, a fantastic old Masonic hall. And forgive me, Dad, what was the name of the street that it's on? Is it Hope Street? Thank you. You know, they've got a fantastic bar downstairs. Masonic shop downstairs as well. I remember buying some new gloves for Chapter when I got down there as well, which was great. And, you know, a lot of the members, of course, being a Liverpool lodge, are seafarers. You know, they've all been in various branches of the Navy, the Merchant Navy, and, you know, the banter there is around the before the meeting and in the festive board is just absolutely first rate. That's quite a, you know, a move away from the Lodge of Fidelity. From those of you who know, is very, very sobering and straight laced when you come to visit. So it'd be good to go and have a you know, a really good experience there. I also, keeping things a bit more local, I guess, really enjoy visiting the Leeds Lodge 9867. A very different, yeah, a few shout-outs there within the group, which is great. I really enjoyed Leeds Lodge because it's different to, you know, everything else that's offered, I think, locally in Freemasonry, certainly in Leeds from my own experience. And again, you know, it's a lodge where a lot of really experienced Masons, they get a tremendous number of candidates in there. And I enjoy the atmosphere there. The ceremonies bring together lots of different rituals, you know, all under one roof, where everybody's sort of doing a bit of their own thing as well, which I think is really great. You know, that adds to the enjoyment and the variety you get to see when you go visiting. Yeah, I think because as well, the kind of run with the four meetings a year, each meeting does sort of tend to attract, you know, quite a lot of visitors. I know the last time we went was on Master's Night when I was Master of Lodge of Fidelity. We took a big cohort and did a sort of a fraternal visit. It was just a great night, you know, just a great place to be and enjoy. So there, if I can lump in Zetland Loyalty and Dawn, because the lodges I'm all very fond of, along with West Derby Castle and Leeds Lodge, those are my five.
That's great. And another shout out to another one of the lodges of someone who's on tonight as well, Brother Paul, Leeds Lodge. So, brethren, again, let's raise a glass to Alex's lodges.
Alex's lodges.
To Alex's lodges.
Can I just ask, at the Leeds Lodge Masters Night that Alex is on. I remember rightly, was that Brother Ramoth's raising?
If it wasn't his raising, it was his passing. But I think you could be right.
No, I think it was possibly his raising because I don't think I was at his passing. His passing got done somewhere else, wasn't it?
Paul's golden three fingers up.
Paul's saying raising.
I was there at his raising, but I had to wait outside. I remember that now. Yeah, because I was there to support him in spirit and at the festive board, but that was pretty much all I was allowed to do at that point.
From memory, Alan, were you the junior warden?
It would depend, in fairness, Matthew, in answer to your question, to be what office was Brother Simon Penny Smith held that year? Because I always seem to end up subbing for him. I was doing senior warden before we closed down, and I did inform him quite strongly that next year I wouldn't be subbing for him if he was going to be missing when he was master. So I think I possibly was the junior warden for Brother Ramos Reyes.
I know you're certainly senior warden for Simon Towns. Yes. Initiation, yeah. Because I remember I'd been up for 36 hours by that point without sleep, and I'd started to basically forget where I was. I remember looking over to you halfway through and you were shooting me daggers. I'd completely zoned out, forgot where I was and whatever I was doing.
I wouldn't be shooting daggers at you, I assure you that.
Was clearly not fit for a Masonic call.
I think it was
so quite likely, I'm sure.
Going to collapse.
Yeah, both quite possibly true there. So, however, yeah, I'm sure whatever I was doing, you were correct.
Just before we move on with the rest of the podcast, I just think we should make one quick toast to worship for Brother Alan Webster on the news of his pending preferment in the Holy Royal Arch. He'll be soon joining the ranks of Grand Lodge, or should I say excellent companion, Alan Webster, in this circumstance. So I just thought the Leeds Light Blues should raise a quick glass.
Am I allowed to take part in this if I'm not in chapter?
I've got a form P printed out for you.
There we go.
Just temporary, Josh.
Well, here, let's raise a glass to see yourself, Alan.
Thank you very much, Alan. Indeed, brother. Thank you.
And more on the Royal Arch later as well. But before we get there, let's start with perhaps humble beginnings. Let's start a bit about the Webster family and how it got involved in masonry. So, Alan, over to you then. So what got you started in Freemasonry and how did you come about it?
I was, in my professional life, an optician, a dispensing optician. And Bob Barber, my worshipful brother Bob Barber of the Lodge of Fidelity, was an agent for a particular line of spectacle frames. And Bob called on me for many years. And we used to spend quite a lot of time talking to me about Freemasonry. And after about 3 years of him talking to me about Freemasonry, I sort of looked at him and said, what do you do if you want to join? He says, you need to ask somebody. And I said, well, who should I ask? And he sort of looked at me and said, who should I ask you? And he went, thank God the penny's dropped. So that's actually, after 3 years, how Bob Barber got me to join Freemasonry. And I suppose, like a lot of other people, I joined Freemasonry basically because of the high regard in which I held him. And Fidelity, or Lodge of Fidelity, have always done the same thing with people who are prospective candidates, in that they've invited them up for a drink, they've invited them to ladies' nights, they've invited them for a supper, after golf matches, anything to introduce them and let the other brethren have a look at them as well. And in those days, we were much bigger lodge than we are now. We're probably over 80. And it was quite an experience meeting all these people and trying to remember everybody's names. I think about 6 months later, it was decided that I would go ahead. And the late Welsh Brother George Craig was the master. And George had done a couple of thirds from the year before, but he hadn't had a candidate. And so I went in the July, and I was initiated in July, August off, past September, raised October, scroll night, installation, the way we went. And that's how I started.
And what year was that, Alan?
1980. I went in July, 85.
Wow, I wasn't even born then.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
I am interested to know, though, from your perspective, if you could say if there's one thing that's changed since 1985 and now in Freemasonry, apart from the fact that obviously we're not meeting at the moment, what would you say that would be the biggest sort of change that you've noticed in that time?
I think now we're a lot more equal than we used to be. When I first started, when somebody came from the province for installation, he would arrive and be greeted by a senior past master. He would be taken to a seat in the temple, He went into the master's bar afterwards. He then went into the festive board, and he then went home. He would never dream, or it would never happen, that like now the installation representatives come round and speak to all the brethren. How are you? What you do? How long have you been? Much more equal in that respect. And I think in lodges as well, the Lodge of Fidelity was never ever sort of a hierarchical in that respect. And the two older members of the lodge, who were well-remembered and respected brothers, Jim Redioff and Albert Dickinson. When I first joined, the first person to speak to me was Albert Dickinson. Now then, Alan, how are you? How are you keeping? Are you well? Everything all right at home? Yeah, lovely, good, good. And we were always equal to talk. But you went to some lodges, and the provincial officers sat up there, and never the twain shall meet. But nowadays, I think, oh, well, I hope you'd all agree, I think the rulers particularly and the senior past masters are much, much more approachable than they were when I first came. And certainly it's for the better.
I've touched on this before on a previous episode, but I remember my initiates evening that I went to get my initiate certificate. And at the time, I was a fellow craft when I received it, but obviously it was for the previous year. The late Stuart Grantham was there, DP Jim at the time. I had no idea who he was, and he didn't even tell me his position. He just came up to me, he asked me how I was, and he said, oh, my name's Stuart. And that was that, and it was only later on that I learned that he was a DPGM. And to me, I'm thinking, oh, you know, wow, okay, fair enough. But yeah, I think definitely, I imagine in times gone by, that probably was never the case.
Well, no, I mean, the first provincial grandmaster when I joined was Rightwood Brother Norman Fowler, who I would never speak to him, I never dreamed of speaking to him. By the time we got to Rightwood Brother Trevor Broadley was the most avuncular man who would speak to anybody. You know, he loved talking to people and he loved chatting. Trevor was succeeded by John Kendall Clayton, who was the most amiable of companions. I mean, he wanted it done right, and if he didn't do it right, he would tell you. But equally, he was very complimentary and always. I mean, I think Alex will remember him coming to the Royal Arts chapter once or twice. And it was just like having any other companion sat there with you. And I don't think anybody would disagree. You couldn't really get much more avuncular than David Pratt, could you? I mean, he is just a socialite. He loves talking to people, loves meeting people. It's good.
Definitely. So we flip the coin now and we go over to spotlights on you now, Alex. Before we ask you kind of, I guess, what made you join Masonry, because I'm guessing, I think we can all guess guess the answer to that one. What's your earliest memory of Freemasonry in your house?
Cases and aprons. Gotta be. July 1985, I was about to be three. My entire conscious life has involved Dad being involved in Freemasonry. Ritual books dotted in strategic places around the house. You know, that was another familiar one. You know, the odd bit of Masonic correspondence and whatever on Dad's bedside. Yeah, that's kind of my first glances at Freemasonry. You know, with the kind of paraphernalia that comes with it all, I guess. And Dad being out at lodge a lot.
I guess the golden question really is, when was it that you were interested in joining yourself?
Oh, blimey, that is a good question, because actually, you know, it's one of those things where I couldn't really give you a moment of clarity when I suddenly thought, I want to be a Freemason. You know, I'd been lucky. I'd grown up around the guys who were in Lodge of Fidelity. So whether that was at lodge functions or outside of lodge, I played a lot of rugby when I was younger and, you know, would spend a huge amount of time up at Yarnborough Rugby Club over in Horsforth, where, you know, a lot of the guys who were in Lodge of Fidelity would go to watch rugby. And whether that was by chance or design, pass, I don't know. Bob Barber, who Dad mentioned, or Worshipful Brother Bob Barber, who brought Dad in, that's where I first met him. He got me into playing rugby as a junior. He bought me a little magazine about mini rugby, which I must have read 1,000 times. It was looked like the dog had got it by the time I'd finished with it. But you know, just years and years of that, really, being around people who, you know, I knew were Freemasons but didn't really know anything about it. And I don't know how old I was, and I probably eventually asked Dad a question about it, and, you know, we just kind of had the conversation of Freemasonry is a, you know, a good thing. It's there for good purposes, and, you know, I hope you'll. I was never pushed or pressed into it. Dad just sort of said, probably once, you know, I'd hope you'd consider joining, you'd join my lodge. And I do remember when I said to Dad, I'd like to join, which was 2010 when I joined. I was initiated in the June of that year, and I'd sort of had a bit of a change in work circumstances. Life suddenly became much more simple in terms of being able to get into something new like Freemasonry. And I asked Dad about joining. And I don't know, I guess now in hindsight, in the time it took to propose to ballot and what have you, I was joining. So, just a lot of fond memories about people who, regrettably are no longer with us, but who were, as it turned out, senior past masters in many respects of the Lodge of Fidelity, who I knew with no sonic edge to it whatsoever. That was sort of what I guess made me realize, yeah, this is something I want to be part of. If these guys are in it, it's got to be good.
Yeah.
So I'd like to join.
And Alex came to you and he said, I'd like to join. How did that make you feel?
Wow. Yes. How did it make me feel? Let me
regretful.
No. It was one of the things where I actually spoke to Alex when he was 21, and he might not remember the conversation. And I said to him, I will never ask you to join Freemasonry. I said, but if you ever consider it, come and talk to me. I said, and I'll try and guide you where you want to go. But of course, what Alex has failed to mention is that he attended the Lodge Christmas party when he was quite a little. When he was three. And in the Lodge of Fidelity, if you were sort of on the portly side, you were at some stage asked to be Father Christmas. And it became my turn to be Father Christmas. And I was sat there in the full kit under the tree at Castle Grove in the port. And all the little kiddies are coming up. And I think Sid Hart, which Brother Sid was collecting the presents. And he pulled it out and said, Alex Webster. And he came forward. Now then, Alex, Merry Christmas. And Alex looked at me and said, thanks, Dad. Which somewhat blew Father Christmas out of the way. So he did have a good bounding. And He did spend a lot of time around Ted Franco, Glyn Davis, the very, very special late Worship Brother Raymond Stanley Johnson of Adler Lodge, who's only just recently died. And when Alex said he wanted to join, I think I straight away got hold of Ted Franco, who'd been hoping he'd join for years, because he'd known Alex since he was a little. And Ted and I sort of had a little sort of jig together. Absolutely over the moon. Because, wouldn't that be funny? You don't make Masons in many ways. Masons are basically born out. And, people have that something inside them that gives them something Masonic. And Alex had always displayed those qualities. Even during his growing up, he was always a lad who had an idea of responsibility and doing the best he could and doing the best for others. So when he decided to join Freemasonry, absolutely delighted.
Alex's initiation then, did you play a part in that? And what part did you play?
Well, I'm very, very conscious in the Lodge of Fidelity. We have had Lewison, but we haven't had that many. And the last one we had before Alex was Worship Brother Frankel's son, Mark. It happened in a year when neither of us were in the chair. And I actually obligated Alex. And I think, in fact, if I remember rightly, I obligated you in all three degrees that you took. Brilliant. Because obviously you don't want to detract from the master. He's got his work to do. But the master was very, very kind and allowed me to do that.
So fantastic.
I felt,
For anyone that knows how well I know ritual, will understand this, that I was rather happy when I was Alex's IPM and when Alan says to me, would you mind if, and I don't think he'd even finished the question, and I went, yes. Fortunately, Alan took a lot of the work off me and I actually only had to put him in the chair, but
that was for his installation saw when he was installed as master.
Sorry, yeah, what did I say? Sorry, initiate.
No,
sorry,
just making clear. Yeah. Well, you see, that was yet another, how many good things can happen to you? How much good luck, how much pleasure can you have all at once? Alex's installation is masculine ability. And Saul is far too modest. Saul did an absolutely magnificent job. And I did the little bits that most of you haven't seen yet. It's a very special thing. I mean, there are lots of sort of Lewis is about, one of my pals who was in my master's circle, which Brother Norman Lowe, who was a member of Thoresby Lodge in Putsey. He had the pleasure of bringing his son Andrew in, and another friend of mine. I'm a Morley boy originally. Integrity Lodge in Morley is a very strong, good lodge there. And they had Worship Brother Jack Binks, who was a grand officer, and his son Richard, and Richard's still around. He's quite a mover and shaker in the Order in the Knights Templar, if any of you are in that. So, you know, Ian Lewis, our assistant PGM, his father, Ron. And, you know, you get an awful lot of pleasure out of it. And hopefully one day, boys, it could be you.
If anyone wants to hear the story of Ian Lewis joining Freemasonry, see season one of our podcast.
Yes, indeed. Yes, season
one. So, obviously, time moved on. Alex, you went through your initiation, you went through your passing, you went through your raising, and then you go through the offices, and then you make it to obviously the chair of King Solomon. From there, you're now in the company of provincial stewards. For those who listen to our podcast regularly, you'll know that we had Worship Brother Trevor Bernard on. He was also in the provincial stewards, still is. Alex, what's your kind of role at the moment in the provincial stewards?
Yeah, really good. You had Trevor on. Trevor's the current chair, which has been no easy task during COVID Freemasonry. My official role at the minute is I'm the assistant comms officer. You know, the company operates, you know, similar to a lot of the other teams in Freemasonry with the various offices, you know, secretary, treasurer, chairman, and comms is obviously part of it now, both in trying to promote what we're doing as well as what we do, if that makes sense. I was keen to take a role on, you know, there's no push. You're not sort of, you know, allocated something when you join. We have an AGM, roles come up. Those who want to put themselves forward can, but it's sort of a progressive office in many respects. You take an assistant's role or a deputy's role, and that's with the attention that you're going to then do the sort of primary role the following year. So in theory, I'll become comms officer, or hopefully I will become comms officer once we've had our AGM this year. Given the game, we're not having listened to Trevor's yet, and if it's out yet and I've missed it, so apologies if that's the case, Trevor. But you know, he may have explained a lot more in a far more erudite way than I can about the company. But you know, in essence, we're there to sort of fulfil any projects that the provincial grand master wants to instigate that aren't already fulfilled by one of the other functions within the province. That's a really important part of the company, is that we're not there to replicate what's already being done.
I mean, I guess you kind of already got a red apron for when it does come time to do the Santa Claus gig at the Lodge of Fidelity.
Absolutely, yeah, that'd be a new one. Yeah, we'll get Santa in regalia. I've had my turn, so I don't think it comes back round to me.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. So the question that's on my mind, though, is when is it Sol's turn?
I'm just throwing this out there. I come with my own belly and beard.
You've done it, Sol.
Oh, volunteer, Josh, you've got the job.
Josh, when I was first elected Santa Bloody Fidelity, the Santa I replaced was very worshipful brother T. George Turnbull, the deputy provincial grand master at the time. And George didn't get made up stuff, he made his own. And so I had to go see him, and he showed me how to make eyebrows out of cotton wool and stick them on. He had the robe and all the best of it. And he turned to me, he got this pillow, and he said, "And you put that on the..." No, he says, "You won't need that, will you? You put the pillow back."
What have been your other sort of like favourite traditions? I mean, I guess we kind of got a bit of a wealth of knowledge here tonight, Brethren, because we've got three past masters of the Lodge of Fidelity on, which is quite a rare feat. So what are your sort of favourite traditions in the Lodge in times gone by?
We're going in batting order.
There's lots of traditions. I mean, anybody who visits knows that we don't do a standardised form of ritual. The ritual that we do is whatever it is. And there was ourselves and another lodge called Karamonas Lodge in the South, who are now defunct, but who did this ritual. Lots of things. Jim Redioff was a very, very well-respected Masonic historian and a full subscribing member and an officer in Aspatara Coronati Lodge. And even Jim couldn't explain all the things that we do. I mean, for instance, the one thing that we do is that we salute it with the grand and royal sign. And that is a third degree sign, or third degree salute. And of course, we salute in every degree in that. And people say, oh, well, you know, why don't you do point left right? Of course, the answer is, in 1792, they hadn't invented point left right, or in fact, the others. So it was just the one salute. And so we've carried on. If you come to a meeting lodge, there's little things which you probably wouldn't notice. When the candidate takes his obligation, the deacons just simply stand to order a deacon. They don't do any sign. They don't put the sign of reverence or anything. They just stand with the wand. And that's something you don't see in other places. Lots of the things which are traditions which are peculiar to us, I don't recognise as such because they've always done that.
Yeah.
I know that's an old excuse in Freemasonry, but it appears to be working for us, so I don't think we're probably going to change it.
I think I like some of the non-ceremonial stuff we have as well, though, or maybe it is ceremonial, I don't know. Pudding night is one of my favourite things in the Lodge of Fidelity. Everyone's looking, going, what?
What is
so
a pudding night?
Pudding night is not the modern sense. Pudding night is named from the historical steak and kidney pudding. And basically, pudding night is our final lodge of instruction before installation. So we have the big...
With or without onions.
Yeah, absolutely. So, more traditions here to come. We have a full undress rehearsal, if you like, of the installation. So we meet a bit earlier. And then we have what has become historically known as pudding night, because in years gone by, time immemorial in our lodge anyway, that's for sure. You know, the meal served was steak and kidney pudding with, as Saul has just alluded to, boiled onions. And no matter what we have now, we still have those boiled onions with the meal, which tends to be steak and kidney pie, I think, if possible. Or fish is the alternative, or a vegetarian is the wonderful array of food is our Castle Grove, of course. But it's sort of all the other bits with it. You know, we have a series of toasts. You know, we have a couple of speeches. It's the opportunity to sort of say a few things, perhaps a bit more intimate to the lodge that you're not going to say at installation when you've and not in an unfriendly way, when you've got sort of, you know, non-members there and your visitors, guests and the like, and a rep. You know, we're able to kind of have that more intimate conversation about the stuff that's happened probably at lodges of instruction or on social functions, or, you know, just funny things that have happened through the year. It's a really good feel-good night for me. Other than the, and I remember Saul sort of, you know, having this discussion when he was to install me. The year goes quick, so it's a great chance when you're the master to reflect on what's gone on, what you've done, what the lodge has been able to do, the experiences, the laughs, you know, the difficulties, because you have all of those, don't you, through your Masonic year. And it's just a really sort of nice, light-hearted way to do it. And I don't know if other lodges do the same thing. I don't think I've ever asked, let alone had anyone ever ask us about it, but that's probably one of my most fond traditions of the Lodge of Fidelity.
It's almost like you said though there, Al, isn't it? Really, it's the night where you can let your hair down but still have the formality. It's very much, obviously you've got to be serious during the installation, and it's one of those amusing ones that every year I think somebody calls it pantomime season when we're working up to installation. And somebody will always say, we've always done it that way. And one of the past masters will say, well, we didn't even do it that way last year, so how we've always done it this way? It's little things like that where you can really let your head down afterwards. The speeches aren't the formal, but without being formal. And you can almost pick on people pleasantly.
I think the main speech on that night is that the senior past master proposes a toast to the outgoing master, and it's actually your annual report. And when Albert Dickinson used to do it, and Albert was about 5'3" tall, and he used to stand up, and he always sat next to the IPM. He'd stand up and he'd look at the master and go, well, you haven't had a bad year. And you could see the master go, God for that. He never actually gave anybody a bad report, but everybody was always extremely nervous, even the ones who've done very, very well. And the one I like is particularly the master proposes a toast to his officers and mentions the things that they've done. And that's where the fun comes in, you know, when things have not quite gone as well as they might sometimes, and you can have that just a gentle joke. But that's the Lodge of Fidelity. I mean, work out, play hard. That's the way I see it. You know, we like to get the ceremonies right. We come down from a temple. We might have spent 2 hours trying to get an installation right. And then once we get into the festive board, undo your braces, sit down, and enjoy the company and fraternity. And that's what it's all about.
The Lodge of Fidelity installation is somewhat legendary, as has been mentioned several times on this podcast. And certainly I remember a particular brother singing the Master's song very well at the last installation of Wish for Brother Lee Creation. That particular brother who was singing it got up on the table, which I'd never seen done before. And it was, it was absolutely brilliant. It's just one of those things that you just took you completely by surprise and you thought, wow, you know, how fantastic is that?
A lot of you here remember the late Welsh brother Stephen Till, won't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very, 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 absolutely. Very, very good friend.
Absolutely.
When I was the master, we had a member called Malcolm Dent. And Malcolm was a member of the Leeds Amateur Operatic Society. And he performed at the Grand Theatre. He was a bit of a thespian and everything, sang, danced a lot. And Malcolm had become practically blind. He was very partially sighted. And when I got to be the master, he said, Alan, could I sing the master song for you? And I said, absolutely, Malcolm. If you want to do that, I'd be delighted. And poor old Malcolm got up to sing. And he hadn't learnt the words. And of course, he's partially sighted, so he couldn't really see. And he had this piece of paper about an inch from his eyes. He was trying to sing the word at a time. And to say it wasn't going very well, would be polite. And Stephen Till was there, and he was the representative. He was representing the PGM. And Steve Till, being Steve Till, just said to me, I think I'll help him out on. Just got to walk round and sang it as a duo with him to give him cues, because he'd pick up the words from Stephen singing. So the master's song at installation will always have a very special meaning for me, for two reasons. One from Malcolm, my old pal, who's no longer with us, and one from Stephen, another old pal, who is also with us.
Let's raise a glass to both of them.
Indeed. Malcolm Denton and Stephen Till.
Malcolm Denton and Stephen Till.
There's one
both
other.
Incidentally, have got marvellous middle names. It was Malcolm Cameron Dent, and of course it was Stephen Milburn Till.
There's another tradition I quite like at Lodge of Fidelity installations, and it probably is done in other lodges, but I quite like it when your officers return and they paying their respects to the new worshipful master in the chair. But they're doing it, and then as they preambulate around, they're singing. And I always enjoy this because I'm sat there as a visitor with the words in front of me. But all these new officers are parading around with grand officers watching on side and everything like that. Trying to sing these words.
Homing.
I just think it's a brilliant tradition.
I mean, I don't know how long you've got to be in before you know the three verses off by heart, because I certainly don't. And
neither do I.
I can only tell you, Alex, I'm on, what am I on now? 36 years, and I don't even know the first verse off by heart.
We were talking earlier about the provincial side of things. There's two more subjects that I think we want to cover tonight. And one of them is the Masonic light side of things. So, Alex, amongst the many other things that you do in Masonry, you are also heavily involved in Masonic light. So, for our listeners that don't know what Masonic light is, give us a bit of a summary of what Masonic light is and what you do, and perhaps the sort of lectures that you've covered and what maybe we might expect in the near future.
Yeah, sure. I will endeavour to cover all that. So, Masonic light is maybe, as the name suggests, it's the programme of Masonic education, or part of, I should say, the programme of Masonic education that we've got in the province of Yorkshire West Riding. It started out quite a while ago in a series of lectures put together by a brother called Robert Lomas. When I first got involved, it was, a series of lectures on symbolism, a little bit about the various degrees, a little bit about the tracing boards. And this was developed further into, you know, what became known as the Provincial Masonic Light Programme, whereby we started to get a little bit more structure around the actual topics that were to be delivered, a little bit more focus on the degrees themselves, started to get a lot more, both in terms of providing input, but being aligned with the Solomon resources that we've now got through UGLE and the Solomon portal. And basically, we're able to go under normal circumstances to go and deliver lectures on various subjects now in lodges, which, of course, you know, for a lot of lodges is a really great way to fill your calendar it's an opportunity to help provide a bit more education in a lodge setting on a series of Masonic topics that aren't too heavy going. You know, they're not so esoteric that you need to have a vast knowledge of Freemasonry beforehand to enjoy them and to get something from them. And likewise, I think, you know, they're obviously not so basic that they're intended for people thinking about Freemasonry. It's there for, you know, for people who've joined. And there's a really big focus around providing little bits of education for all brothers, all levels of office, but especially for newly initiated Freemasons who come in having seen, you know, a moderately complicated ceremony. You know, we all go through the experience, don't we, of what just happened? You know, what have I just been through? I don't remember walking in, let alone what was said to me. So trying to help encourage that understanding and that knowledge for newly initiated brothers is a really key focus. And it's there to support the mentors as well, you know, with the work that they're doing with their own brethren. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a case of, you know, Masonic Lights got to be delivered on our say-so or by us. You know, there's resources there, especially now with Solomon, for the mentors to use, and we actively promote that. And it just means that we've got the means to support brothers with education in person. That's progressed quite a bit, and particularly this year with the pandemic, it's been forced to progress in that the team has to some degrees got two component parts now. So, you know, we have a team that's run by Worship Brother Tim Hendra, which is the Masonic Light team as such that goes out and does the hands-on delivery. And then we've got the webinar team as well now, of which I have joined as kind of a what felt like a natural progression in the current state to get involved with. And that's primarily overseen by Worship Brother Ken Wotton and Worship Brother Tim Worrell and Worship Brother Lance Milburn, who, you know, have been responsible for putting together a series of webinars, which I think, you know, some of you guys certainly I know have been on, around 3 degrees and various other topics of Masonic interest or Masonic links. And it's just been a really great way to continually deliver some kind of Freemasonry, whether your own lodge has been meeting or not through the pandemic, to try and give people a, you know, a bit of an understanding of alternative subjects that either involve Freemasons or you know, Freemasonry sort of had a big hand in. You know, we talk about what Freemasonry does in society, and sometimes we don't grasp that ourselves. So these talks are, you know, are really helpful. And certainly in the future, look, you know, the long and short of the team is that, you know, they're already involved a lot more in training and development as well around in the province. So the certainly the webinar team has been involved in what used to be the workshops. They've now been brought online, so the webinar team's been able to handle that. And obviously, it's a really great way of delivering training now. You know, shorter, sharper sessions, more interaction as well, which was something we were seeing with the workshops anyway from the training development team. And this especially, you know, is enabling that. You know, I make no pretense to be some great Masonic scholar. You know, I'm a veritable pup in Freemasonry compared with some of these guys. And you know, for me, it was about my own learning and understanding as well. You know, I wanted to get involved when it was actually Worshipful Brother Peter Smith from Philanthropic Lodge, who was running the program when I first went to a couple of lectures, and they were asking for people to help. And I thought, you know what, you know, I'm happy to help and get involved and help organize. And it'd be great to be able to get a bit more understanding, because we've got to be more wide ranging, I think, in the ways that we offer education for people, because not everybody wants to trawl through the minutes of Masonic meetings to find out what's going on. Not everybody wants to read some of the, you know, the historic volumes of Freemasonry, because look, they can be hard work and they can be difficult to understand if, you know, if your approach to Freemasonry is one of you know, the three grand principles in a very basic sense. And I say that not as in a critical way. I very much view that as my own sort of outlook on Freemasonry. Those methods aren't for everyone. So to be able to sit and listen to a short talk, you know, that covers some key points and puts some different perspectives to you, that's really, really, you know, great in my view.
You presented a lecture on Zoom on the Lodge Fidelity of the Masonic History of Leeds. You know what, you say veritable put, mate, but I think you did a sterling job on that particular lecture. What other sort of lectures have you been working with throughout lockdown then up until this point?
So I've been pretty lucky. I've been able to deliver lectures as part of the webinar team. So I was able to deliver a lecture on the third degree which, you know, was just basically, you know, nothing. It's nothing too intricate. And the short, one of the real crucial things that I think that I'm going to say we, because I'm part of the team, but that in essence, the team that developed it, you know, Ken and his team primarily, is that the lectures are short and sharp, and they cover some real fundamentals, and it helps keep you interested. And it helps you actually take something away from it. Being able to deliver that, as you know, it's also helped for my own knowledge and understanding on that. So that was really, really good. I'm delivering a lecture in another few months, again, which is a repeat of the lecture about the Royal Masonic Hospital. So, yeah, that was one I found really interesting to listen to myself, but it's a great, you know, way for people to understand the contribution of Freemasons to society, and you know, the things that we've been involved in, certainly, you know, going back historically.
Some of the work that you're doing is invaluable, and I kind of was writing some notes down as you were speaking, and I was just thinking that it's so true. Freemasonry doesn't just exist to kind of make men and turn them into Masons. It's meant to make men better, and it is through that Masonic education that we develop people in terms of understanding ritual, but also understanding kind of the other parts of Freemasonry. And I was on one of your lectures recently, which was around Houdini.
Yeah.
And it's things like that. It's just, it's something different. Because on the one hand, like you say, there's the core learning of Freemasonry, you know, the degree work and everything like that, which is so vital. But then also that, there's that other aspect of like Houdini and other people that you've mentioned to kind of help brethren understand more about Freemasonry and its connection to the real world as well, and not just internally and how to develop themselves. I also really enjoy the interactive polls that you've managed to build into them, into the online lectures. I think they're brilliant. I think... it keeps you on your toes as well. It makes sure that you're listening. And it helps everyone gauge where they fit within the people that are the audience in terms of their own knowledge. You might answer the question right, you might answer it wrong. It doesn't really matter, but you can gauge where your understanding is in terms of the overall concept. And I think that's brilliant. So thank you very much for all the work you do on it.
No. I feel I can take very limited credit. They kind of point me and shoot me or point me and let me shoot words at people. Content comes from far worthier brethren than me. But no, thanks, Matthew. Look, you know, I'm obviously a major advocate. You know, I guess in formal terms, I'm the Area 5 lead for Masonic Light in terms of the sort of, you know, in-person delivery. So I'm a big believer in the program. You know, there's a great team. And shameless plug, you know, if people want to get involved, you know, please do, you know, get in contact through the the provincial website. You know, we're looking for more hands on deck, as you know, there's some real scope, I think, with this now to help educate. Seems a bit patronizing, but you know, to help provide a means for people to, you know, seek out that Masonic light should they want to look somewhere else to find it.
Part of Freemasonry is being lost by candidates just being thrown in one after the other every month, and was not actually getting any education alongside that. So obviously Alex's team pointing out their various good words is a great help to the people that are hearing lectures outside.
I think there's probably never been a better time really for Masonic knowledge, is there? Because obviously you've got all these sources of Masonic knowledge now, such as Solomon as well. I imagine Solomon's probably helped you out quite a lot in your team, Alex, as well, putting some of that content together.
Yeah, I know it's something that, you know, as a province, we've had a really sort of, you know, big hand in creating, which is, you know, something we should be very, very, you know, proud of anyway, to be able to sort of be involved in an initiative like that. But it's a testament to, you know, to the content team, you know, who put all this together. You know, the formats that we've used for delivering the sessions as well, you know, are seen as models for how we should do it, you know, across the whole host of Masonic outlets. So, you know, I think there's a tremendous amount of you know, pride in being involved in such a good initiative. And look, like lots of the comments there have alluded to, you know, some of the best parts I think of the Masonic Light program are that It's very much put across as this is an interpretation. This is not necessarily what your lodge does or should do, because we all do things ever so slightly differently, even when, you know, we talk about you know, rituals and ceremony perambulations being the same. There's always slight variations, and that's not wrong. That's what you do. And you know, it comes back to, I guess, what I said earlier, you know, in that I'm a, my outlook on Freemasonry, you know, is fairly simplistic. You know, as long as you're doing those basic things correctly, and you know, the message gets out there as to what the basics are of what we're all about and what we're trying to do. Matthew summed up, you know, we're all just trying to get better as people. Well, you know, long live the variety, in my view. That's one of the best things about Freemasonry, is the many different means with the same end.
Let's all raise a glass to the Masonic Light team for the hard work that you guys do, for the projects that you've got ongoing. So thank you very much.
Masonic Light team.
Can you give us any sneak peeks of anything that's coming up? Anything in the pipeline? Anything like that? I mean, so, asking for like a new track or you new album coming out?
Yeah, you don't want to spoil anything, do you? No, look, I think, you know, just keeping out for you know, more lectures.
Excellent. And just before we move on the topic of Masonic knowledge, through this very highly sophisticated Light Blues telegraph system, I have one question for you, which is, we have on tonight a Lewis. And for the benefit of our listeners, could you tell us what a Lewis is?
Oh, blimey, Alex. Here we go.
So this is your Solomon nugget for the night.
This is the no pressure question on what a Lewis is. So a Lewis is, in essence, a cramp that was used to lift incredibly heavy stones. And for those of you that have seen me in Lodge, you'll see that I have a pin badge, which is a Lewis. It involves, in essence, I'm going to try and describe it now incredibly poorly here. But if you like, there are three blocks which fit into a slot which has to be carved out of the stone, which in essence, once they're set in, your two outer blocks, forgive me, because it's definitely not you know, going to be the right description on the shapes here, but the sort of
it's a dovetail joint, in essence,
I mean, Josh has summarized it beautifully there. Yeah, so three pins, two pins sort of slip in ever so slightly under the stone, the middle pin holds those in place. You then have a pin that goes through the top, which attaches to the little hook that you would lift up with the derrick, I think is the correct name for the crane device that's used, and that enables you to lift the heavy stone, which of course, as a Lewis, you are supposed to bear the burden of the midday sun, etc., on behalf of your parents, and in this instance your father, as a not necessarily aging but older Freemason, and that is the Lewis. So it'd be better if I could draw it, but Josh has summed it up beautifully. Basically operates as a kind of a dovetail lifting device.
Jeff, I thought you were going to describe yourself as a heavy stone for a minute there.
Well, I have been a heavy burden on my parents for many years, Jeff, as you well know. At least I was able to describe what one is.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much for that on-the-spot knowledge there, Alex. It's appreciated. It's not often we do that. So,
could have had egg on my face there, couldn't I?
Well, if we do ask you to come back, I hope you're not hesitant. okay, then. So over to you then, Alan. So the final question of the night surrounds the Royal Arch. In fact, just before we do that, brethren, the hands are there about square. So let's just take the opportunity while we can now to raise a glass to absent brethren.
Absent brethren.
The Royal Arch is obviously something which I'm pretty sure most Masons know about. However, Masons who are coming into the craft, who are fairly new, be it an apprentice or perhaps even fellow craft, may not know about it. So what is the Holy Royal Arch? And why should a Master Mason join the Holy Royal Arch? So two questions. What is it? And why should a Master Mason join it?
Right. Okay. Well, first of all, a Master Mason shouldn't join it until he is completely comfortable with his craft masonry. There is a regulation whereby a Master Mason can join the Royal Arch 1 month after he's been raised to the third degree. Now, there may be people who've done that and found it to be a very, very happy moment, but I personally remember when I was a young lad being told, you need to get your feet under the table and find out a bit more about the craft. 3 or 4 years, let yourself go, and you'll get to know a little bit more, and then you can move on. The Royal Arch, and I mean, a lot of people, I think, feel as though they're being pressurised into joining the Royal Arch. And there isn't any pressure in joining the Royal Arch. It's something I think all Master Masons, once they've learnt a bit more about Freemasonry in general, would get a little bit more interest, a little bit more knowledge, and want to move on. And not a higher degree, anything like that. It's the completion of the third degree. It is in actual fact recommended now that when candidates are interviewed as prospective candidates for Freemasonry, as well as explaining to them that there are three degrees in the craft, that there is also the Royal Arch. The Royal Arch was very, very simply explained to me by one of my old mentors when he said to me that Freemasonry, the craft, is about teaching you how to improve your relationships with your fellow man, how to become a better person, and how to live your life. The Royal Arch is about how you view your relationship with whomever you think is a supreme being, whether it's God, whatever, etc., etc. And it does take a little bit more of an understanding. From the start, we usually meet less frequently. And so if you've been in the Royal Arch, say, 4 years, you've probably only attended as many meetings as you would in a craft lodge in a year. So it takes a little while before everything starts to make place. What I would recommend, most lodges now, and quite a high percentage, have a Royal Arch representative. And I would recommend any younger Mason or any newly joined Mason, go have a chat with your Royal Arch representative. Ask any questions you want, and they'll be pleased to try and help you and give you a little bit more of an understanding. The Royal Arch for me has been a rather sort of pleasurable long-term thing. But when I joined the Royal Arch, I was ambushed by Dick Beavers and John Stones, two great Masons, who said, we think it's time you join the Royal Arch now, Alan. You seem to be getting very, very good this year. You're a good regular attender and blah, 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 blah. And I went, well, I'm a bit busy at the minute because I'm just starting my own. Yeah, don't worry. We don't need to come in for 12 months. Oh, I said, fine. And then about 3 weeks later, they said, no, you're coming in April. And I was in. And what they didn't tell me, of course, was when I joined in 1987, you couldn't become a principal of a Royal Arch chapter, which is the way you move through the chair, until you've been through the chair of the craft. Well, of course, at that time, it took you about 15 years to get through the chair in the Lodge of Fidelity. So although I became a Royal Arch Mason in 1987, I actually became Zerubbabel in 2005. And they changed the regulation whereby you didn't have to go through the chair and the craft the year I was going through the chair and the craft. So I've had a long association with the Royal Arch, which I've really enjoyed. It's enabled me to have, I think, not just about how I conduct myself with my fellow men, but how I see myself in a relationship with the superior being. And without going into the ceremony of the Royal Arch, I don't know how many Royal Arch Masons are on this meeting tonight, but there are various parts of the Royal Arch where you look and you think, wow, that is impressive. And you go away from there and you start to think about things. And the trouble with the Royal Arch is people back out of the Royal Arch where they say, I never really got it. You know, it was a bit of a stumble. And I think Saul said this to me, didn't you, Saul? Didn't you say you had trouble getting what the Royal Arch meant?
Very much so, yeah. I have trouble understanding a lot of things, so something like that. I'd been in about 8 years before I had a light bulb moment in craft. So when I joined chapter, really, I still don't totally get the whole thing with it. I think any of these things take a lot of time. I think you've got to listen to a lot of words. I think you've got to look behind the words. I think you've got to look behind the ceremonies of any of these things. I think you could ask 10 Freemasons what they get out of craft, and you get 10 different answers. Because I don't honestly think that with Freemasonry and chapter and any other side degrees, There isn't a single thing that any one member of a craft or a chapter lodge, if there's 30 members, I bet you'd get 30 different opinions on what they're going to get from it.
And that's right. And that's the whole point about these things, that you think about it before you join. Seek the advice of the representative in your own lodge and have a read. Solomon's got lots of stuff on the Royal Arch. Have a read and see what you think there. Get a flavour of it before you join.
Alan,
have a taster.
Do you think, unlike craft, where there's a lot of encouragement to go visiting, within Royal Arch, there doesn't seem to be that push to visit other chapters? Like, I've been in however many years I've been in, and I've never been to I don't think I've ever been to another chapter. Maybe I went to Matthews. I can't remember. I think I did. But apart from that, there's no sort of encouragement to go visiting. And I know when we have our meetings, it's very rare that you have anybody from anywhere apart from the province.
Well, of course, the thing in Leeds, with Royal Archmaster in Leeds, is that you've always got one visitor, because the Leeds and District Royal Arch Council send a representative. And so they fulfil a very valuable thing. And Royal Arch Councils, incidentally, if you don't know whether you know this or not, we are the only province in the United Kingdom that has Royal Arch Councils. Nobody else has them. And they are such a valuable thing. And visiting in chapter, you're right, Saul. And one of the reasons you're right is very simply that people attend craft, they're visiting craft, they attend Royal Arch, and it's how far do you push the boat out? I mean, a lot of young men on this podcast, and you've only got so much time you can devote to your Freemasonry, and you tend to lop off what's the most inconvenient. And in many ways, sometimes visiting in the Royal Arch isn't convenient, and people would not knock a visit off in the craft and visit in the Royal Arch. But Royal Arch visiting is fantastic. As Stuart Glasgow Carley, the most excellent Grant Superintendent, always says, the good thing about visiting to the Royal Arch in West Yorkshire is that we have 81 chapters and 83 different rituals. And he's dead right. He's dead right. When I became a member of the installation panel and started visiting more widely, I went down to Sheffield and it was a fantastic night out. I had a really good time. I was really well looked after. And it was so different. It was absolutely different. And I was really glad I went. So much so that despite the fact that I'm the panel member in Leeds, I had three visits into Sheffield and its area on the next round of visits because I enjoyed myself so much. And it's like everything else. If you like visiting, if you're a gregarious, get yourself out and visit.
Alan, for the benefit of our listeners, you're the assistant provincial,
I am an assistant.
Assistant to the provincial grand principals. That's the one. I'll start again. So for the benefits of the listeners, Alan, you're the assistant to the provincial grand principals, which means obviously you're on the provincial ruling executive as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that means, what you do, and how you found out that you were going to be receiving that function, role? And how you found out that you were going to be receiving that position and office?
Well, I think the first thing I ought to tell you, no matter where you go in Freemasonry, always remember we are all equal. We're all on a level. So Denise and I sat on the bed upstairs. I just had a phone call and I said to Denise, I've been asked to be an assistant to provincial grand principals. She said, well, what does that entail? I said, well, I get oversight of an area in Freemasonry. I said, I'm going to be overlooking the Bradford area. I said, I've got 14 chapters. I said, and I visit them. I said, I provide support. I give advice. If they need anything, I try to help them. I act as a link between them. And I said, I attend installations. And I get the provincial honours system. And I have to put an input into that. And I have to write reports on chapter. And I give an annual report here and all the rest of it. And Denise looked at me and said, and they've asked you. And there you are, brethren. Always remember, always on a level. Well, Matthew, basically, I was more than surprised. I mean, I was actually the acting provincial grant scribe Nehemiah, and you get no warning at all of that. I got a letter in the post from the most excellent grant superintendent offering me the office. And I sat and looked at it for a long while because there was no PP. It just said provincial grant scribe Nehemiah. And it sort of finally worked out that I'd actually been given that. And that got me onto the installation panel. Now, the most excellent grant superintendent is well known to me because in another order, I'm the deputy grant supreme ruler in the Order of the Secret Monitor. And the most excellent grant superintendent is a past grant supreme ruler. And the way you sit in the meeting room is that the deputy sits to the right of the boss, and then the past boss has sit to the right of him. So I've sat next to Stuart quite a lot of times. And I consider him a friend, and I've spoken to him quite a lot about various things, and I've sat with him at festive boards. And then suddenly out of the blue, he said to me, "How busy are you at the minute?" I said, "Well, you know," I said, I'm quite busy. I've got me this and that." I said, "But, you know, yeah, I'm all right. I'm retired now." And I was like, "All right," I said. And that was it. And then 3 months later, he rang me up and said, "I would like you to be the assistant to provincial grant principals to cover Area 1, which is basically Bradford, Dewsbury, Hecton, Dwight." And I said, "Wow, yeah, you know, if you think I can do it, I'd love to do it." "Right," he said, that's that sort of that. And that's how it worked, basically. It was purely at the behest of the most excellent grant superintendent. And basically, there's the most excellent grant superintendent, the deputy grant superintendent, who's excellent companion, David Boyle, who basically runs and administrates the whole of the province. And then we have excellent companion Francis Testo, who's the second provincial grant principal, or provincial Haggai. He looks after Area 5, which is Leeds, our craft area. Then we've got excellent companion Graham Franklin, and Graham looks after Area 3, which is basically the Calder Valley out to Todmorden and beyond, and he's the provincial grant Joshua. And then there are three assistants to the provincial grant principals who don't wear chains. They're not chain-bearing rulers. And the three are Frank Taylor, and Frank looks after Area 3, which is Harrogate, Skipton, and that sort of thing. Philip Drury, who looks after Area 4, which is Sheffield. He's got a very big area. And I hope, if Philip listens to this, I can wish him well here, because unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, Philip had a heart attack. Fortunately, they were able to look after him and treat him, and he's now doing pretty well. He's on his way to recovery. And then the youngest member, if you like, or the junior member, I'm not the youngest, Frank's younger than me, the junior member is myself, and I'm looking after Area 1, which is Bradford. Anything else you want to know, Matt?
Brilliant. No, I thought that was really interesting and comprehensive.
Yeah, definitely.
The one thing I've learned from...
to know, you can ask me.
The one thing I've learned from that is that being the provincial Grand Joshua... the excellent provincial Grand Joshua, rather, sounds like a hilariously ironic job title.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. But seriously, Royal Arch, by all means, consider it. I mean, I'm a Mark Mason. I'm a member of, I think, 13 orders in all. And it depends how much you want to learn.
Reiterate something you said before, which I think is really important. Whole Royal Arch is a really, really good order. And, you know, the key is forget everything you've heard and talk to someone who you know is in it, I think, to get best reflection of what it's all about. Because it's really, I really enjoy Holy Royal Arch, and it really frustrates me when people form these really polarized opinions about it as an order, and they either feel they've got to really, really, you know, pump it up to be something, or they've got to dismiss it because it's something in the field they get pushed into. And whilst I it needs no pumping up for me, if you just talk to people involved about what it entails, you know, what they think it's about, because this is something I've been really lucky. I get to have lots of WhatsApp conversations with Brother Matthew about all the different facets of Freemasonry. But we've talked a lot about Holy Royal Arch and what we think it means to us. And the fact is that it's great because there's so many different interpretations, and you know, it's like a lot of other parts of Freemasonry. It's what it is to you, if that isn't too clumsy a way of putting it. But it's a super order. In my view, all the good things there are about it, you know, are true. And a lot of the things people think they won't like it for are generally misconceptions or just misunderstandings. Talk to someone who's involved. Talk to someone you know who is involved rather than someone who you don't know, because, you know, they'll give you an honest view on it. And all I can say is, when it comes to understanding it, Jeffers, this for you, mate, particularly, you know, I think until you get to sit in that principal's chairs set up at the top and get an overview of the whole ceremony when you exalt someone, that's when it started to become clearer for me. And I'd done some of the other big pieces of ritual in the Holy Royal Arch myself. But when you're sort of at the part of the chapter where all the kind of, you know, pulling things together happens, that's when all of a sudden those little light bulbs start to flicker and then come on, because you suddenly read something 150 times when you're trying to learn it and it has some context. And as Dad was saying, you know, that context around your relationship with your supreme being, it's really thought-provoking, and I think that helps you enjoy it even more. Sorry, that'll probably all get cut out because it was drivel, but I felt like I wanted to let you guys know that's how I felt about it.
Which you mentioned there, Alex, is mentioned in the ceremony that you go through, where one of the very last parts is that you're told it is only by passing through these chairs that you will get a full appreciation of the meaning of this order. But sort yourselves out, talk to people. We're all adults, we can all make decisions based on facts. But the thing is, enjoy your Freemasonry. That's what we're here for. We're here to improve ourselves and enjoy it. One thing you might not know, but when Alex was a teenager, he played a bit of rugby. He actually played for England at under-18s. And when he played for England under-18s, they played in the Home Nations Tournament and they were playing in Ireland for a fortnight. And of course, I thought I might as well probably go along because I might need some help drinking the beer and everything. So I went to watch. And I was stood watching the first game and Alex was on the bench. And the fellow who was the coach of the forwards was stood watching and he looked at me and he said, "Are you Alex's father?" I said, "Yes, I am." "All right, pleased to meet you. Paul Duggan, was it, Alex?" "I'm Paul Duggan."
Paul Duggan, yeah.
And we got chatting and watching and doing this. And all of a sudden something came up and I said to him, "You on the square?" "Yeah, I'm," he said. He was a member of a lodge in Essex and all the rest of it. And he said to me, "Don't say anything to anybody else, you know," he says. "They'll think it's a Masonic plot and your kids got picked."
I didn't play another game.
Awesome. Right, well, I think that pretty much rounds up the night. And again, thank you very much for you both coming on. It's been absolutely fantastic. So with that then, I have been your host, Brother Matt Namiria.
I am still Brother Josh Doherty Turnbull.
I'm always Brother Matthew Wharton.
I have been and always will be Brother Paul Rogers.
Still here, worshipful Brother Saul Nyman.
And I'm just glad to have survived, worship Brother Alan Webster.
Yes.
And I'm just glad I've had to follow all of that, worship Brother Alex Webster.
And we'll see you, brethren, on the next one. Good night.
Good night, brethren.
Good night, brethren.
Good night, brethren.